Welcome to part four of this podcast series, What is Community Philanthropy? Janet, Marianne, Masha, Rita and Tarisai set the scene for us in the last episode, showing how community philanthropy is gaining traction in many different localities, urban, rural, in less prosperous and even in affluent economies. Across all these situations, there seem to be real benefits in starting from local people's insights, priorities and capacities, rather than reinforcing a dependency on funding, aid and projects. But isn't this all a bit fanciful, idealistic? How could it ever work in practice? Let's turn to our group and start by clarifying what's at the heart of community philanthropy, and then move on to how it can work in practice.
Whereby we have a picture that communities are not poor, though they have traditionally been regarded as poor. And when we say they are not poor, what we mean is that they might not have finances, or they might not be able to give financially, but they can give in other forms, like contributing their time and also using the different assets that they have. This can even be their, like in a rural area that we are working with in, this can be the goats, the chickens, the cows, that can be translated to monetary form and they can be used. So for us, it's just about local giving by ordinary people. That's how we see local philanthropy as.
So it's really working in ways which allow communities to be part of reflecting on how they got to where they are and how they can come out, so that they can be in charge and be drivers of their own development, so that they can influence even government resources that need to be allocated for service delivery, for example, and also so that they can be engaged when development actors come to the community. They are able to ask questions and be part of deciding what is good for us. So they are not just there to receive. They can tell someone, you know, from where we are, this is what we need, not what you want to give us. So it calls for empowered communities.
I think this three aspects of kind of doing things holistically, working with the resources which are available and finding these local assets, and kind of through this process building trust and kind of allowing people to work together. This is really very important.
Okay, so how can communities be mobilized and empowered in the ways that Tarisai, Janet and Masha described there? Obviously, there are a lot of technical aspects to this, but one word that came up again and again was the word trust.
It's about, for them, it's about when they give money and who they give money is over a time they develop real community. I mean, they have relationships, of trust and relationships of friendships and many networkings that goes on. So therefore, it's not just about that fundraising, but it's about that whole act of how we do it.
It's not easy because, first of all, well, people tend to be mostly passive and not very engaged, and it's kind of takes some work to get the traction. But also all of those resources, trust, time, initiative, it's a very valuable asset which is scarce everywhere. So, yeah, I think that's not easy at all. And it takes a lot of leadership and courage to start doing something like that, to make this step forward.
The issue of trust is really important, because this organization, these communities, they give to organizations that they have trust. So as civil society organizations, we make sure that our work is rooted within the communities. We are not just fly-by or pass-by organizations that are not well-known within the communities. So trust is an important factor in terms of getting the communities to give.
I think the trust piece is very important to talk about, because it's very hard to make it work if you don't have the trust piece. So the trust piece is fundamental, and it's something that is built over long periods of time, right?
If the starting point is building trust, then the key word that leapt out to me from what Rita, Masha, Teresai and Marianne said there was time. The trouble is, time is often in short supply in the development industry, and that's what needs to change. Teresai said, we're not just flying by or passing by as organisations. So after trust, our second building block is time. Trust and time. Essential building blocks for community philanthropy. What about resources?
A community foundation raises support from the local community. So be they donors, be they allies, be they just volunteers, be their grantees themselves who also give back. Many of our grantees have given back to Tewa in a small way. Nonetheless, it's very valuable and important. And they also, like, they'll sell raffles for you. They'll do other kinds of campaigns. So in this way, the entire community is involved in whatever. We are learning from each other. And we are also gifting each other. It's not a one-way street.
Making use of the community's own resources and building ownership is clearly vital. But what happens when external resources are involved? I asked Teresai about this.
The bigger issue is around sustainability. So the communities are determining the use of the external resources in ensuring that they address the challenges that they have and to improve their own quality of life. So it's more around co-creation of different projects where the communities are involved, such that when external funding is gone, there's still sustainability. So there is this marriage that has to happen between external resources and local resources, so that even the local people, if a borehole has been drilled in their community, they'll even take better care of it because they know that they have contributed something. But if money just comes and is splashed on them from the external funders, even the way they take care of it is different. There's no attachment and there's no ownership. So we cannot totally do away with external resources. There has to be a balance where the two sort of work together.
We opened a community fund that's really impressive, that's growing. We were able to fundraise with a small, very small business, and they're doing like monthly donations to the fund. And last year we launched this fund, so it's been 1 year and a half, and we grew from only 2 members to 20. So now we have 20 people and corporations that donate monthly to support social justice issues. And we decide together, so we have like a shared governance. So last year we supported LGBT's rights. And this year we supported gender issues, and we gave grants to a group of people that's doing basically like workshops to women that are in jail. So when they come out of jail, they can have a better job. So always working with groups that are invisible to the society.
What happens though if local funding comes with strings attached? I asked Janet about this.
Yeah, and I think sometimes when people realize this is what is popular now, sometimes they just happy to jump into it, but they are not necessarily very serious about really supporting people-led development, because it really means you, the funder, or whoever is the giver of the resources, are open to the things that emerge from the people. You are happy to be informed. You are happy to listen. You are happy to give the time that is needed to create that kind of rapport with a local community, that kind of trust. And I think not too many actors are really thinking seriously about these things or are genuine about it. And I think that is where now we end up with a bit of a problem, because sometimes people want to do things very quickly, you know. And these are things, this is about people, human beings, developing trust with one another.
Interesting that we've explored local resources and external resources, but Janet's brought us back to those two key words, time and trust, it seems you can't escape from the fact that effective community development involves more than just systems or projects. It involves working with people, gaining their trust and spending the time to do so. What does this look like in practice? Let's look at a couple of case studies from Russia and Brazil.
Well, this is one of my favorite recently. It's a community foundation which is called the MIL, Melnitsa in Russian, which was founded a few years ago. It's one of the recent ones in a village, really, in Karelia, in the northwest of Russia. And this village is 3,500 people. So it's rather small settlement, kind of beautiful setting on a lake, in a forest, very, very nice kind of nature around. And it was found by a group of young women who were doing different projects, different community projects, and they thought that there should be something, you know, that the community should be doing together. And one of the things which they do, they started reviving the local crafts. And one of the fundraising kind of mechanisms they use, that they make this specific local pies, engage with other women to kind of, they sell them at different events, and that's how they bring in some initial money into the community foundations. What they did recently, they introduced giving circles in their community. Giving circle is this kind of live crowdfunding methodology, which allows community to raise funding like on the night during a nice event, when members of the community actually present their projects, their ideas, and the community, if the community likes those ideas, they chip in and collect the money to deliver those projects. So they started in their main village, and then they also rolled this out to other smaller villages, which are kind of part of their municipality. So over the course of the summer, I think they organized, about 10 giving circles. And these are not projects which are presented by any NGOs, because there are not many. They are presented by specific members of the community, and they kind of this kind of event, the giving circle event, is actually organized outside, or kind of on a kind of green space and the marquee. And it's really, I attended one this June. And it really very, very, it just feels so exciting, because people actually know what this is all about. They understand. And you would never expect this kind of, this group of people to come up with this impressive amounts of money for the projects.
We were discussing about the community that the city hall didn't know how many homeless people were there and didn't know the profile. And we discussed with them, okay, let's do a project together. And we decided to do a diagnostic study involving the homeless people themselves. So we gathered 12 people in homeless situation, and we gave them a little money so that they could participate and pay their expenses. And we decided which questions that we wanted to ask from the streets, and they decided with us. So it was really like sharing the power, as you can say. And we mapped 1,000 homeless people, and they were talking among each other. So in the process of them interviewing other people and homeless people, they really got together and strengthened. So not only have a report that we can go to the public policies makers and we can ask for they can ask for their rights, but they got strengthened because they got to know more people in homeless situations. And these people joined the movement, and then they started to fundraise for the first time, and they started to fundraise for things like theater. They start to go to the university to present the data, and then the university, they would pay them to go give a talk. So that's how like we really changed one reality.
In both those snapshots, people have started to take action, using their own capacities and finding their own resources. And in both cases, the things they've done have started to gather momentum and draw in more people and more action.
Everyone is an agent here, and everyone owns it because everything is transparent. I think that's really important and how we run our foundations.
There's some sense of togetherness that we see each time we are visiting a community. Like, they're speaking with one voice, and if they're contributing, they are agreeing to say, okay, let's do this and let's work together as a team.
It really leaves people with no choice but to do something for themselves. And I think this is the reason why community philanthropy has been so successful in Russia recently. Just because people don't have other mechanisms to really introduce some changes and improvements in their lives.
The way we are able to put the community together, this community leadership, right, to be able to unite all sorts of groups, different groups and classes and powers within the community. So I think the ability, the community leadership and the ability to facilitate conversations to the well-being of the community, that's what the end result, right? To reduce inequalities and to improve the quality of life within the community.
If community philanthropy has been for you, as it has been for me, a hidden story, then I hope that Janet, Marianne, Masha, Rita, Tarasai, and Renji have brought it to life for you, and also made the case for starting with community capacities, listening, building trust, taking time, working together, recognising that everyone is an agent.